I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. This week, we look at corruption in Florida government. A new report finds that in terms of federal public convictions, Florida ranked worst when measured between the years 2000 and 2010 among all the states in the union. Came in worse than Illinois, worse than Louisiana. Ahead, an expert panel of Tallahassee journalists and the executive director of the organization behind the report joins me to discuss why Florida leaders are ranking so high in the number of federal corruption convictions. A recent report finds that Florida led the nation in federal public corruption convictions between 2000 and 2010. The report by Integrity Florida, a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization, it comes just as the Florida Commission on Ethics is working on its legislative agenda for next year's session. The report finds that corruption in Florida is worsening. To talk about why, I'm joined from WFSU in Tallahassee by our expert panel. Dan Krasner is the executive director of Integrity Florida. Dan, good to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Mark.
Also with us is Bill Cotterell, longtime journalist at the Tallahassee Democrat. Bill, nice to speak with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
And John Kennedy, a journalist with the Palm Beach Post in Tallahassee Bureau. Thank you so much, John.
Good to be here, Mark.
So, Dan, I want to start with you. Integrity Florida is a startup organization established earlier this year, but with the mission to expose public corruption in the state. So what do you define as corruption?
Corruption occurs when someone is serving in a public office and seeking personal financial gain or advantages that they wouldn't have without that office. It also happens when they're abusing that office and being dishonest with the services they're providing their constituents.
Your report found that Florida is facing a corruption crisis and that there was an upward trend towards more federal public corruption convictions between 2000 and 2010. What are some of the findings that you came across?
Yeah, we found Florida since 1999 has led the country five times in the number of total federal public corruption convictions. And we're a large state, and it could mean that our federal law enforcement investigators and federal courts are doing a great job. But when we look at other large states, you know, Texas and California only led the country three times each in that time period. We also don't have state ethics law enforcement officers on the beat. Our ethics commission is one of less than 20 states in the country without the ability to self-initiate their own investigation. So essentially we have a good job being done by federal law enforcement officers to crack down on corruption in Florida. We still lead the country, and if we led the country in murder, that would be a problem. And we lead the country in corruption. But at the state level, we essentially have like a speeding limit, but no one to check for speeders. That's how we do state and local level ethics law enforcement in Florida.
What do you mean by that?
30 other states have ethics commissions with the ability to self-initiate, self-start their own investigations. In Florida, our Commission on Ethics has to wait for the public, a citizen, to file a legally sufficient complaint. And we're down to just 169 complaints in 2011. So we know at the federal law level we're leading the country in corruption, but we can't even tell how bad the problem might be at the state and local level because that tool is not in place. It was the Florida Commission on Ethics put it on their agenda again this year for the legislative session, for the governor to look at having that authority to start their own investigations. Integrity Florida's research supports that. But it's time for bold leadership from the governor and the legislature to put those state ethics law enforcement officers on the beat.
So I want to throw to Bill Cotterell and John Kennedy, both the Tallahassee journalists. I wonder, both Bill and John, are there any examples of this federal corruption convictions that stand out for you as journalists that have gotten the public's attention over the last 10 years?
Well, in Palm Beach County, the county that my paper is based, we had four county commissioners plead guilty to corruption charges over 4 years that ended in 2010. I mean, that's a remarkable number, more than half the county commission. And I think we've seen just episodes of it in Tallahassee as well during the course of the last few years. We had a House Speaker step down, first time ever in Florida history. just a couple of years ago for budget shenanigans, tucking
that,
in.
That was Ray Sansom.
That's right, yeah, Ray Sansom, tucking into the state budget funding for a college in the panhandle that later gave him a six-figure job. Those kind of episodes, I mean, the Sansom case was remarkable, but we have legislators all the time being accused of ethics violations, going before the commission, sometimes, you know, reaching a settlement or being found guilty of a charge. And the punishment, punishment to some degree is it's sort of colonial. You know, it's like you're put in the stocks. You know, as far as you get a newspaper story on page 3B or something like that, and that's pretty much the extent of the punishment. And whether that's really working as a deterrent, that's up to others to consider at this point, I guess. But just this past week, we had a state senator withdraw his candidacy for re-election because, he had pled guilty to an ethics charge earlier this year in which he had failed to disclose a $500,000 gift that had been given to his wife that was used to buy a house. And that charge kind of dogging him, I think, led him to, in part, to decide to not seek re-election. But, the examples are pretty much myriad.
And Bill Cotterell, any stories stand out for you in your many years of covering politics in the state of Florida?
Well, really kind of reflect back on what Dan and John said. I think it's important to note that Ray Sansom was not acquitted, but they dropped prosecution in the middle of the trial. And in other words, he's found innocent, bottom line. So many people would say that the trouble with ethics in Washington and the state capitals is not what they do that's illegal, but what's legal that shouldn't be. However, I have I don't think that giving the Ethics Commission authority to initiate complaints, I don't think that's an unalloyed benefit. I think there needs to be an independent commission. That puts the nine members on the side of the prosecution. I mean, there is a state attorney, a United States attorney, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the sheriff, individual citizens. It's not like if something's on the front page of the paper, say, I believe the Ray Sansom case did result in ethics complaints. It's not like nobody else has the power to initiate these things. They do get initiated, and as John said, people are put in the stocks even if they're not criminally convicted. It's and I do here again, although I agree the Ethics Commission should be able to initiate. You shouldn't have to take a sworn complaint that puts the plaintiff at risk of attorney's fees if it proves false. I don't know what the answer is, but I am concerned that, say, I become governor. I've got 8 years. I can replace at least five commissioners, maybe seven if people resign or die. So I get rid of the executive director. I get somebody in there that will go after my enemies and prosecute, whether I'm coming from the SEIU on the left or the Tea Party on the right. I can go after the people that just don't look right to me.
Well, what do you think about that, Dan Krasner?
30 other states have this ability, and Florida's been given a failing grade for ethics enforcement by a collaborative effort at stateintegrity.org, including that was the Center for Public Integrity, Global Integrity, and Public Radio International. So we have this F grade that's hanging out there, and as people are thinking about where to bring jobs, they look at Florida failing for ethics enforcement and not having the ability to self-initiate investigations would be – I mean, that's what's really holding us back. We could go from an F to an A to – if we had that – and I agree with Bill. The commission ultimately needs more independence. What they have now, and by statute, they have to be bipartisan, so that's good. The governor appoints five of the nine commissioners, the House Speaker two and the Senate President two, and they're required to have Democrats and Republicans on there regardless of who's in charge. So if you had a supermajority – providing oversight. You know, if staff says, here's something that we just heard about on WMFE, clear case of a state ethics law violation. With a supermajority oversight, they should be able to say, okay, go ahead, begin an investigation. They shouldn't have to wait for a citizen complaint to come in. You know, if there's a you know, in downtown Orlando, if a crime is taking place, you don't have, you know, a police officer doesn't have to wait for someone to call 911 to begin pursuing the suspect. But that's how we do ethics law enforcement in Florida. So we need those state level ethics law enforcement officers on the beat. And I fully agree with Bill. I hope we can get into the problems of legalized corruption, which is probably an even greater problem in Florida today.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. We're talking about government corruption in the state of Florida. Dan Krasner is the executive director of Integrity Florida. We're also joined by Bill Cotterell, journalist with the Tallahassee Democrat, and John Kennedy, journalist with the Palm Beach Post Tallahassee Bureau. I'm Mark Simpson. Do you think corruption in Florida is worse than in any other state? Tell us what you think at Facebook or Twitter. You can send email to intersection@WMFE.org. And I know, Bill Cotterell, you had a follow-up thought there.
This would not be so much the Ethics Commission, although they have recommended greatly stiffening their fines, increasing, I think, to a maximum of $100,000 in past years. The commission has sought to really not just enforcement authority, but to greatly upgrade those fines. And I would like to see serious criminal penalties attached to deliberate, knowing corruption. Right now, the 40 years or so that I've worked around Tallahassee, I've seen so many cases where people, well, it's a white collar offense. This guy's a educated man. The public doesn't need to be protected from him. So he gets probation and restitution and a fine, which these are generally fairly rich people in public office. They can afford the fine. Send a couple of these guys down to Rayford for maybe 18 months. And the rest are going to say, whoa, wait a minute.
Let me just throw this to Dan Krasner. What do you think, Dan, in terms of motivation for all of these convictions? We saw a big spike in that 10 years. It was called maybe a corruption tax in that wording. Do you think stiffer penalties would do something to change that? And why do you think there was this spike between 2000 and 2010?
We need increased penalties for ethics law violators. The Florida Commission on Ethics met in Tallahassee on June 15th, and they prioritized increased penalties from the current maximum of $10,000 to raising that to $25,000. That's specifically laid out in Integrity Florida's research report that we released on June 6th. So we agree with that priority. We also agree with the Ethics Commission looking at fine enforcement. Unfortunately, those that are being fined for violating ethics laws aren't all paying their fines. We have sitting elected officials like Representative Eric Fresen from South Florida that owes an ethics fine, and he gets to continue serving in the legislature and not paying that. We need to collect those, and hopefully the legislature will look at either wage garnishment or look at liens on property. Until that comes in, you shouldn't be able to receive a public sector salary while you still owe fines to the Ethics Commission.
John Kennedy, you had a thought?
Well, that is one of the things that it's sort of misleading for a lot of members of the public to think that, well, you know, somebody is found guilty of doing something wrong and they've been fined. So, you know, that punishment is going to take place. I did a story last fall where the state right now is owed more than $800 million. By people for fees, fines, and court-ordered payments of some kind, much of it for some wrongdoing. And it oftentimes, you know, that's supposed to make somebody whole if they were the victim of a fraud, or it's supposed to be a punishment to try to deter fraud or to deter wrongdoing. And in this case, for various reasons, the state cannot really, you know, get the people that they levied the fines on. So it leaves you wondering, you know, are these fines pretty hollow as well?
What role do you think the open government laws in Florida play in terms of routing out corruption? I wonder, from a journalistic standpoint, Florida has one of the state's strongest open records laws. So how do you think corruption is able to flourish in an environment where you've got these open sunshine laws? And John, if you want to pick up, you can.
Sure. Well, again, it's something where a lot of the issues that, you know, lead to some corruption charge can be exposed. But so often it seems that the corruption itself is sophisticated. It's not, you know, no more are people being caught with bags of money. You know, that doesn't happen that frequently. It's usually something where somebody has, you know, worked with a former contractor or developer, you know, a relative of some kind maybe, they've helped in some business deal. And the elected official or the public official has benefited from that in some capacity. But there's usually several layers in between. And maybe it's not that easy to judge. And really, indeed, the Ethics Commission, the civil body that has been pursuing these cases, so often is cast as this toothless tiger because the level of guilt that they must find is so clear and sweeping that it's very difficult, I think, for them to conclude that there has been wrongdoing there. I think all of us that have covered the Ethics Commission through the years have always, smirked at the kind of rulings that we often hear come out of them, where something to, an 8-year-old, if you told them what happened, the 8-year-old might say, that guy's guilty. He did something wrong. But to the Ethics Commission, it can be something where they really seem to feel that their hands are tied in trying to declare something black and white when there are so many levels of gray in between.
Dan Krasner, where do we see these federal convictions taking place? Are they just governments at the state level, or are they also local and city governments? Where do we see the majority of this corruption occurring and the convictions coming from?
Oh, the federal convictions are a whole range of federal, state, and local officials. They're staff members and elected officials. They're vendors that are doing business. You have more local officials overall, so you often see more cases at the local level. But the U.S. Department of Justice doesn't break out the data clearly for us to see in Florida exactly where these figures, who they're counting for that year's data set. What we do know is that corruption does not like sunlight, and disclosure is the key to accountability. And according to Barbara Peterson at the First Amendment Foundation, unfortunately, Florida now has more than 1,000 exemptions to the Sunshine Law. So we need to start looking at what's working locally. In Orange County, Mayor Teresa Jacobs has put in place more local disclosure for the public officials there, more regular disclosure, and so more detail, more often. That seems to be a model to look at in Palm Beach County, where John's newspaper is based. Palm Beach County was known as Corruption County by Time Magazine, and then they passed significant local ethics reform initiatives. And now I would call them the ethics reform capital of Florida. Duval County in Jacksonville, with leadership from Carla Miller and Ethics Commissioner Carlucci, who was on city council there, they've passed local ethics reforms. So we see that's kind of the new paradigm in Florida. People are tired of waiting on a range of governors and legislatures to take action. So they're going to their city and their county governments for ethics reform. That's where the hope is. It's really happening at the grassroots level.
John Kennedy with the Palm Beach Post, I wonder what your feelings are about the role of those sunshine laws and the way politicians choose to interpret them. Every time a different governor comes in, there's a little bit of a tweak to how easy it is for a press to get access to various documents, as I can recall from my own days as a Capitol reporter. What do you think in terms of trying to maybe track the current administration, Rick Scott's administration, compared to previous ones? Is it more likely today that you're finding politicians trying to get around sunshine laws, not using email to avoid a paper trail, and also charging fees to get access to those documents?
Well, there is a lot of that. I mean, it's something where I think everybody acknowledges that the sunshine laws are there. They're great things. But I think they remain, for many people in elected office, an obstacle to getting things done. And, whether that be done rightly or in the great public interest or just as efficiently and as pragmatically as possible. So, people are always trying to get around them. Governor Scott, for his credit, has started a email service, Project Sunburst, where, we can look in on email that's coming in and out of his office. It's not real time. It's a day delay typically. But still, you're able to see quite a bit of exchanges between the governor and some of his closest aides and other department people as well. But again, what you don't know is the email that doesn't show up. And the phone calls that are made or the email that goes from somebody's Gmail account as opposed to from their own public email account. So there's always that skepticism. And oftentimes that skepticism from our reporting has proven accurate. There's a reason for us to be skeptical because we find out things that were not made public. So I think there's always going to be sort of a cat and mouse between the press corps and the politicians.
Am I recalling correctly that under Governor Bush, though, there were some pretty steep fees to get some public records released in hard copy, and under Governor Crist, he did away with some of those?
Yeah, well, the fees are back under Governor Scott, and they can be stiff.
Part of the time of Governor Bush's administration also, if you don't like it, you could say he used it cynically. If you do agree, it was a necessary security requirement. But after 9/11, the Department of Homeland Security tightened down on a lot of things had to be redacted. And, of course, Social Security numbers and some personal medical information, things like that have to be – I was on the state employee beat, which in Tallahassee, of course, it's very big. And when I'd ask for information or asked, I used to, back during the Bob Graham years, go in, read a person's personnel file. Now, well, we're going to have to redact it and then copy it, which is going to be 15 cents a page and a day's delay. Whereas, on the other hand, if it's something they want out and that any department, and I'm not saying just Jeb Bush, but if it's something the government wants out, you'll have it in a half an hour. Maybe it will have to be redacted and copied, but don't worry about that here. Take it. So there are – as I say, if you don't like it, it's cynical manipulation and obfuscation. If you happen to agree, well, then it's just the necessary security of the state. But as John was saying, they can use the existing laws to at least delay, if not prevent, disclosure. And another thing, the governor, in addition to the email stuff, Rick Scott has also started, I think he calls it Florida's right to know, or the public needs to know, or something. You can look up a person's salary, just enter their last name, first name, et cetera, department they work in, which is a quick tool for reporters. It's not exactly vital public information, I don't imagine, but at least it's something that wasn't online available immediately in the past.
I want to ask about the Florida Ethics Commission, which recently met just last week to determine its legislative priorities for the next year. And the commission, of course, charged with enforcing ethics laws. What is coming down from the Ethics Commission in terms of an agenda? And how likely do you think it is to be adopted? And I know all of you at one point were checking in on that meeting. So whoever wants to take it.
Well, I think they seem to go for a rather modest package that they're going to try to put before the legislature. And this is sort of the product of many years of putting more ambitious packages before them and having them completely ignored. So they're hoping maybe this year with a smaller target that they'll have more success. But again, they are trying to get at this issue of fines that they can enforce and recover because indeed right now if somebody ignores their financial disclosure form and does not turn it in, they get letters, notices from the Ethics Commission that you have failed to do this, that you must do this. And if you continue to ignore it after a four-year period, you're free. You're never going to get fined. So these fines that accumulate, which are in the several thousands of dollars in some cases, are eventually go before the Ethics Commission with a request, you want to write them off because you can't collect them anymore. And the Ethics Commission, in their most recent meeting, has sort of drawn a line there and said, we're not going to just keep writing them off. And we're going to go to the legislature. We're going to try to accumulate enough dollars, you know, in outstanding fines to try to help make their case and hope that the legislature will feel compelled to try to take some steps, whether it be prohibiting a public official from serving in that office until their fine is paid, to things like liens on property and garnishing of wages, because right now it's a system that's just not working, and they do send them to these outstanding fines. They do get sent to the chief financial officer's office who has collection agencies that allegedly pursue these people. But when the collection agency can't, you know, satisfy them, can't get that money out of them, I think the collection agency gives up too. So it's a system that's just failed right now.
I like John's idea of putting them in stocks. No, that would be the modern news media, including Twitter and Facebook and such. And County Commissioner so-and-so has scoffed at a Representative Friesen from Miami, who was in last week's mentioned in last week's list of write-off fines. Put it out there in the media. The Ethics Commission could just put out press releases. I'm sure the local media would like to call up their mayor and say, well, you're continuing to draw a salary from the public and you have this, let's say, $1,500 fine. Why should the public be paying you $80,000 a year and you can't even spare $1,500?
Well, Dan Krasner, does this speak to the point in a little bit of irony that the body that is tasked with regulating lawmakers has to go to those lawmakers to ask for more authority? Is this a bit of a vicious circle?
It's a challenge, but the Florida Commission on Ethics has done a good job over the years since 1974 when they were created. With the tools they have, they've earned the public trust. You know, they go out every year and they have to get nearly 40,000 public officials to file their financial disclosure forms to disclose all their assets, their liabilities, their net worth, a lot of information. And they have a 99% collection rate. I mean, they show that if you give them a tool like that, they do a good job. So the tools that they're asking for, their priorities of increasing the penalties for ethics law violations from $10,000 to $25,000, that's a good move. The ask for better fine enforcement, to have more tools, since I mean they're not a collection agency, but if they had the ability to garnish wages or have liens on property, if they had those tools, I'm sure they would do a good job. But what we need really is for the governor who committed to ethics reform, and the incoming Senate President Don Gates, incoming House Speaker Will Weatherford, to take a bold stand and say Florida is going to become the 31st state in the country to have self-initiation of investigations. We'd like to see them have a report corruption hotline for citizens to call in. We should expand the ethics code to follow all the money since we were privatizing more and more of state government. I mean, we need to have a bold ethics reform package. That's what citizens want. And if you don't do these things at the state and local level, you essentially create a gateway drug for legalized corruption to run rampant in the state, and that's how you end up leading the country in federal public corruption convictions. It's like when in New York City, when they cracked down on crime, you know, Mayor Giuliani started looking at broken windows and fixing those so bigger crimes didn't take place. You know, right now we have a lot of broken windows in Florida. We have a lot of legalized corruption and a lot of corruption and unethical activity that could be – we can reverse the course if the governor and the legislature take bold action next session.
That's Dan Krasner. He's Executive Director of Integrity Florida. Bill Cotterell joined us, journalist at Tallahassee Democrat, and John Kennedy, journalist at the Palm Beach Post Tallahassee Bureau. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Mark.
And also, I want to say thanks to the staff at WFSU in Tallahassee. The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at the Florida Talks blog. Visit WMFE.org/intersection to find out more. There you can sign up for our weekly podcast. What do you think the solution is to Florida's corruption problem? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter, or send email to intersection@WMFE.org. Support for the program comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.